This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the NFL Wire of USA Today. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and this is episode 289. And unfortunately, we don't have good stuff to talk about today, at least to start, because the Cardinals lost an embarrassingly disappointment, because the loss wasn't embarrassing from start to finish. It wasn't like some of the other losses that they've had before, but it was a very disappointing loss, wouldn't you say, Seth?
Yeah, it's disappointing because they're clearly, you know, the superior team. They outplayed the Patriots in basically every facet of the game, and they came away on the bottom, you know, in outcome. And, you know, it's leading to question marks about certain aspects of the team and what, you know, where they are as far as this team building and where they're at in that aspect.
And in this edition of the show, we're going to talk about, we'll talk about the game. We'll revisit it. We revisit the 20-17 loss as to how in the world did they manage to lose that game. Is Cliff to blame? Is Zane Gonzalez to blame? We'll take a look at the Cardinals' playoff chances, where they now stand as we enter Week 13, and preview the game in Week 13 against the LA Rams. Is it a must win? That's kick things off. So we look at that game, Seth. If there are one or two things you could put your finger on, what led to that loss? Because as you said, if you look at it, they outgained the Patriots offensively. They had better time of possession. They were better on third down. They had more sacks, tackles for losses. They won the turnover battle. In essentially every statistic, every metric that you use to outplay a team that leads to victories, they got off to a quick start like they hadn't done in previous games, and yet they still managed to lose the game. What can you put your finger on as to the reason why?
You know, I think there's a couple things. One, their special teams was awful in this game. You know, they gave up two big returns, one in the kickoff and one in the punt game. That really kind of led to Patriots having short field and directly led to 10 points. In an otherwise, what you and I would agree is a stellar defensive performance. I think that's the first thing is, you know, the Cardinals as a team haven't played really a complete game in a while. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate and odd to see. I think the next thing is that you look at is that this team struggles when Kyler Murray isn't effective running the football. And they can't have that, you know, and be successful. So if Murray is bogged down, you know, you would expect this team to be able to, with Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds, still run the ball effectively. And for whatever reason right now, they just can't seem to do it.
You know, obviously special teams contributed mightily to that. And I don't want to blame the referees, but the refereeing, the officiating was an issue. It was a factor. It was a factor in the game. Now it was a factor in the game in two on both sides. The penalty, like they had the Patriots had a punt return for a touchdown taken off the board on a penalty that, you know, on the pool report after the game, where a reporter talks to the head referee, the head official, apparently three different officials threw a flag on that block by Anthony Jennings on Zeke Turner, led to the illegal block, and that backed him up and eliminated it, negated the touchdown. So that cost New England 4 points. I guess according to the letter of the law, the wording of the ruling, that was the right call, and three different officials saw it. But it was, you know, it was unfortunate. Now, the Cardinals, the officials didn't call the Kenyon Drake fourth down run a touchdown there at the last play of the first half. It appears on a couple of replays. Now, it was tough. I get why it wasn't overturned and ruled a touchdown, because that was just, there was too many bodies. There was too much clutter there to get a clear shot. But there was one shot that I saw that a fan sent me that showed he definitely got the ball past the goal line. And so that was something the officials obviously should have caught, would have been the difference in the game. And then that hit, I don't know what to think on that hit by Isaiah Simmons on Cam Newton, because it wasn't a late hit. And he did go shoulder to shoulder. He did make contact with the helmet, but I wouldn't think that's a call that isn't made against any other position player running the ball in that situation. And that penalty led directly to the field goal. And they had to get a couple more yards, but it led to Nick Folk's game-winning field goal from 50 yards. And so the officiating was in there again. But yeah, you mentioned the special teams. That was an option. There were three short fields. So 17 of the Patriots' 20 points came on drives where they started on Arizona's side of the field. One was the interception, and then two were those returns. And so you have shades of 2017. And yes, Trent Sherfield was out. That's not necessarily an excuse to be bad on special teams.
I was going to say, one gunner shouldn't make that fast of a difference in your special teams.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, on that punt return, now Andy Isabella, we don't know what, he completely misplayed because he ran by the runner to begin with, and I think it was a case of he did not expect Andy Lee's punt to be so bad. And two, what the heck, Andy Lee missing that punt. And then, that doesn't even factor in the Zane Gonzalez miss. We're going to talk more about Zane Gonzalez, but that makes, now, for Zane, three end of fourth quarter kicks to tie or win the game that he has missed. He did get the one in overtime, but he has been anti-clutch for the Cardinals for the last month.
Well, and it's interesting because, I mean, I know we'll talk about it, but it's not like the field goals have been bombs. They've all been less than 50 yards, and it's still not automatic, don't get me wrong, but anything under 50 yards, you expect a close to 90% accuracy rate from your kicker.
Anymore, and, yeah. This isn't 1985.
And the fact that, I mean, I still think the most baffling one is the Dolphins one, where he just came up short, and everybody's like, what just happened? But it just seems like the moment, it's compounding almost to this point, kind of like these third and fourth and one situations that the Cardinals are getting in. It's almost like this oh crap moment, like oh crap, it's happening again. instead of being like, no, I got this. And you know, I'd said this on Twitter. I don't, you know, and it's the downfall of having a guy like Cliff Kingsbury as your coach when he is truly a player's coach, is that he has unwavering faith in his players. And that's one of the things that he believes, is that Zane's going to make the next one. And it's all well and good for Cliff to believe that, but at some point, Zane has to believe that too. And I just, you know, I don't know, obviously, Zane or anything like that, but it seems like right now that's not where his head is.
Yeah, it really feels like, we'll talk about this a little bit, but it feels like 2016 Shadow Catanzaro again is kind of what's happening. He'll get in a groove and then be out of it again. You kind of look at some of the things, but ultimately, that was a game the Cardinals absolutely had no business. They didn't play well offensively. They played well enough. And defensively, they were overall very good. They loaded the box. they forced Cam Newton to throw the ball, and then Cam Newton did not throw the ball well. Their passing attack was pretty much atrocious. They needed to make one play and didn't. You know, the third down, third and 13, after they got the sack, Cam was able to scramble and get the first down and then pick up an extra 15 on the Isaiah Simmons penalty. But we've seen on a few times this year that the defense just hasn't been able to make one more play. And whether that's the result of a depleted defensive line or the offense not being, or just whatever, it just comes down to that they're not making quite enough. While they're playing well overall, when they need one more play, they're not getting it.
Yeah, and that makes it tough, man. I mean, when you just don't make, or when you don't get one big play a game, it makes it really difficult for a team to be successful. And we're, you know, we can say that the defense played well because they did. I mean, nobody's going to deny that they played well for 90% of the game. But there seems to be one drive a week that really plagues this team. And you know, and we're seeing it, unfortunately, be end-of-game drives where they just can't find a way to get a stop. And, you know, that's, again, we've talked about this quite a bit when you talk about good and bad teams. That's kind of what separates good and bad teams, right? I mean, good teams find a way to get off the field. Bad teams are left wondering what could have been on Monday. And I shouldn't say bad teams, but, you know, teams that aren't going to contend for a Super Bowl right now. And that's just, I mean, as good as this season has been, as ahead of schedule as they are, that's, I think, at the end of the day, what we have to kind of pump the brakes and remember is that this team just isn't in that Super Bowl contention spot yet. They're definitely good enough to win any given Sunday, but they have baffling bouts of inconsistency that make them, you know, that team that can lose to anybody any week, you know, whether it be a good, you know, Seattle team or a bad New England team. I mean, that's just what the problem is that, you know, they play down and barely lose to, you know, the number two seed in the NFC. They play down and then lose to a non-playoff team in the AFC. I mean, that's just who they are.
Cut out next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk a little bit more about the game, and let's talk about if we need to blame Cliff Kingsbury, if there's something, if there's the decisions here as he is making are ultimately what have been their woes, not just the last this week, past weekend, but in their last four games. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the star of Cardinals talk on the web. Cliff Kingsbury's decisions haven't been working out real well lately, have they? So we look at a couple in particular. In that game against New England, they're down and near the goal line at late in the first half. He's playing clock management. They get to the 6-inch line and decide to go for it on fourth down. They run the clock down, so it's going to be the last play of the half, and they get nothing out of it. So instead of going for 3 points, they go for the touchdown. This has kind of been consistent for Cliff Kingsbury over the last couple of years, but they come up short, don't get any points in that drive, and then they get the ball in the second half. They don't get the points at the start of the second half, and that kind of turns things around. Secondly, you look at the decision to call timeout on that last New England drive. Now, granted, so they pick up the sack on second down. It's third and 13. Cliff Kingsbury calls a timeout because at 56 seconds left in the game, he's thinking, hey, with one more stop, they'd have a chance to – they potentially could have had, you know, anywhere between 30 or, you know – 20 seconds to 50 seconds left on the clock with the chance to move the ball and get another field goal attempt. But instead of getting a stop, they pick up the first down at another 15 yards. And if Cliff doesn't call that timeout, there's probably not time. There's not as much time. And instead of a 50-yard field goal, you're probably looking at something that more of the 55-yard range where Nick Folk is not that good. Do you blame, in part, the decision-making of Cliff Kingsbury?
You know, I just wonder if he's battling himself. If there's, you know, we talked about confidence issue. If Cliff is struggling with that confidence issue, if he's struggling to find his way right now and what he should be doing to put this team in a position. Because, I mean, that's one of the things that we talk about with him quite a bit is that he's very willing to take the blame for things. He's very willing to be the guy that's, you know, that is at fault for things that go wrong. And it's admirable, but at some point, is it him or is he just stepping up for guys that are missing things? You know, whether it be Zane Gonzalez missing kicks, whether it be Andy Lee not kicking the ball well, whether it be Patrick Peterson, you know, not covering well or not making tackles in the open field on running plays. I mean, whatever the situation may be, at some point, either he's got to hold the team accountable or he's going to be held accountable and, you know, be gone. And so that's what my biggest question is for him is I think he's a very good tactician. I think the players really like him because he is a guy that he's kind of the anti-Bruce Arians, right? Like he's got the same type of mind as Bruce, but he's not going to throw guys under the bus. But I wonder at what point he becomes a little bit less of the guy that's, you know, willing to take the blame for things. And he's willing to start kind of, I'm not saying throw guys under the bus, obviously, but maybe explain why they're in this bad position week after week after week.
Right. And I'll take the example of the end of the half decision. Unless they score the touchdown, which they might have, there's no good outcome. Like in the moment, no one is happy with that because if they run down the clock, decide to kick the 18, 19 yard field goal, people are hooting, hollering. There would have been upset fans about not going for the 7 points and being aggressive. But when you don't get the points, then you question it. And ultimately, I didn't hate the decision. It did match his... It matches his philosophy. It has been consistently what he's done in that scenario early in the game, around the goal line. You go for it on fourth down, and they've mostly been good at it. They've converted. But it's one of those situations you have to look at the after, you know, you have to look at it in hindsight. Yes, in retrospect, no matter what happens, if he kicks the field goal instead of he's going to get killed for it either way. But if you end up looking at it in hindsight, obviously they needed the 3 points. And that's probably something he needs to look at when it comes to that. Or he probably just looks at it. He says, you know, it looked like he was in. And that's probably what he feels is like it should have been a touchdown. The end of the game things. And now the one thing that I always tend to wonder about and I'm guessing probably is going to have to change is his willingness to play for a field goal at the end of the fourth quarter when his kicker has been awful at the end of the fourth quarter in kicks. You know, I know there's execution issues, and they hadn't had great success passing the ball, and one of the game plans that they wanted to do was to be physical and run the ball against that defense. But they get in a situation, it's the third and one, and they can't pick up the first down again. You'd like to see them try have a better strategy for getting the first down, because in these four games, they feel confident he's playing for the field goal when all that Zane Gonzalez has done more recently is let us down.
Yeah, and at some point, you know, that's kind of what we were both saying, is that they've got to execute, and the guys have to execute. And, you know, at some point, he doesn't need to take the blame for that. He needs to, you know, he either needs to not leave it up to the kicker and be more aggressive or in getting closer, or he needs to just leave his offense on the field and put the pressure on the opposing defense to get a stop. You know, and I think it goes along with the fourth down plays that we've seen, you know, the third and fourth and short plays that we've seen, where for whatever reason, they're consistently trying to run up the middle. And, you know, at some point you look at it and you go, okay, well, you know, you can want to run up the middle all you want. There's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. But if it's not effective, and if you have, you know, a guy like J.R. Sweezy or a really banged up Justin Pugh who's maybe not playing at the high level that you expect, well, then isn't there a better alternative?
Right. And the part that in old school me, I'm old enough that it that close, I'm thinking it should be a quarterback sneak at every time. But the problem is this, and Cliff Kingsbury talked about this on his TV program last week and alluded to it in the post game. They do not have a quarterback sneak play for Kyler under center. That is something Kyler is apparently not comfortable with, and so they don't ask him to do it. And I get why, but here's the thing. They weren't afraid to use Chris Streveler earlier in the year. Now, granted, I will say this. Cliff took a lot of heat when he took Kyler off the field to bring in Streveler, but here is something that would make sense. You put Streveler on the field, under center. He's more physical, a runner, and you have him do that. And what you do is you put Kyler in the slot, maybe motion him to perhaps take a quick pitch to get to the outside, and you at least create an illusion of that. And that's something you could do multiple times because you've got different looks. But I wish when we saw what they were going to do with Streveler earlier in the season that they would be willing to do that more, especially if Kyler's not comfortable on their center for that play, that's fine. For me, it's a really high percentage play. We see a lot of quarterbacks do it. Carson Wentz on Monday night, he did a couple times. Tom Brady's one of the greatest ever. It's not exactly like he's a big mobile guy. It's fine if Kyler doesn't work well under center like that. That's I'm okay with that. But at least use Streveler in that situation, or the direct snap, like, or even if you go direct snap to Drake, those tend to, I don't know if I've seen that fail to pick up even a yard. So that's something I wish that he would include in the game plan, and that is frankly a Cliff Kingsbury thing. I get why he's not forcing Kyler to do it. He wants his quarterback to be comfortable with what they're doing, but that's got to be a part of the game plan, in my opinion. And I think that would alleviate a lot of the problems that they're having on the third and fourth and one, when they can, you know, you get it in the shotgun or the pistol 5 to 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and they can key on Kyler and load the box with Streveler under center. It takes care of that.
Yeah, and just, you know, be aggressive in that. And I don't... you know, whether it's Trevler, I mean, use him as a use Trevler in the Wildcat, or just run straight Wildcat with Kenyon Drake. I mean, I feel like there's more that you can do than continually running read option into the middle of the defense. And I feel like Cliff is creative enough to do more than that. And it just seems like he gets stuck in these funks where he feels like he has to prove something. I honestly don't know.
Well, Cut out next on the Rise of the Red podcast, the best part of Cardinals talk on the way. Let's move on. Let's talk about the kicking situation. Zane Gonzalez, what do the Cardinals do with him the rest of the season? That's Cut out next on Rise of the Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best served Cardinals talk on the web, and we've got to talk about Zay Gonzalez. With as much good as he's done for the team the last couple of 2 years plus, it has become painfully evident, as we've alluded to earlier in the show, that he doesn't have the mojo for the late fourth quarter kick. He missed a game winner against Seattle. He got the opportunity to kick in it overtime. He missed the game tire against Miami and missed a game winner now against the Patriots, all in the last month. Is there anything that can be done about Gonzalez? Because here's the thing. As much as we'd like to say cut Gonzalez, that $3.25 million contract that he signed on the restricted free agent tender is fully guaranteed. And if you're going to bring up Mike Nugent from the practice squad in his place, I don't know if I like that option any better. That's kind of a conundrum they had. What should they do about Zane?
You know, I think at this point it's too late. It's tough. It's tough to cut a player this late in the season. There's typically not an answer on the street right now.
I mean, there's Steven Hauschka out there, but we've seen his failures up close in Arizona when he missed the kicks. I mean, now granted, it was a confusing few years ago, but that overtime game, the 6-6 tie, when he missed two field goals in overtime and another one in regulation too, it was Hauschka is not necessarily the best answer. He's been good, but yeah, you don't really have any better options off the street.
And so you just sit and you deal with the downs of this season for a guy. And I think you live with the consequences of the decision you made to give him that contract. I mean, you, at the end of the day, finding a good kicker is hard. Let's just be honest. And the Cardinals had Rackers and Jay Feely for a while, and that worked out well. And since then, they've kind of had guys that have had really good seasons and then, you know, failed. And what makes being a good kicker is not just having, you know, that one good season, but it's a consistency of being able to string together 3, 4, 5 seasons in a row. Zane's in a funk. And his numbers at the end of the day aren't going to look awful, but he's going to be directly tied to, you know, two losses this season. And that becomes the question of, you know, is he the guy full time moving forward? And I don't know if he is, to be completely honest. You know, it's odd to see a guy where he struggles the most in that 40 to 49 yard range. I mean, that's just weird to me. He's 8 for 12 in that range, and 3 of those kicks were tie or go ahead kicks.
Right, and it's you know, for me, because he's been pretty nails at over 50. He's nails.
Yeah, he's 2 for 3 over 50. That's the crazy part.
And the one miss over 50, I believe, was it in week 1? Or was that a 40, like a 49-yarder that he missed? I don't remember.
I think that was week one, yeah.
I think you're right. He hasn't missed a 50-pluser since week one of this season. And, yeah, but I guess the only thing you can do, if you can't make a personnel change, is that just changes your endgame strategy. You now know that unless you're in a catastrophe, you have to go, you have to get basically inside... You have to get inside the 25, essentially. You know you have to get inside the 25 to feel comfortable. And I think that's kind of the way they have to go is instead of Cliff being content to play for that makeable field goal, you've got to push the envelope and know, hey, we've got to get it inside the 25. We've got to get it basically down to the 20 to really feel comfortable. And that's going to change his play calling and his strategy, I think. But honestly, there's nothing else you can do other than, hey, don't be in a situation where you need him at the end of the game. Make better decisions and execute better earlier in the game so that you're up by a full score or not losing at the end of a game.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easier said than done, obviously. But yeah, I mean, when you haven't missed a 50-yard field goal since, you know, the second quarter of week one, when you are, you know, when you've missed one field goal all season outside of 50 yards, or sorry, out when you've only missed one field goal outside of 40 yards all season, it's just, and you've only missed one extra point all season. I mean, it's just, That's what I mean. At the end of the day, I mean, he's at 76.2%, and that's not good. I mean, you need to be above 85% to be a good kicker in this league. And four of those misses are in that 40 to 49 range, and that's kind of money zone for a kicker when you really think about it. That's the place where you know, kind of live, because that's not a green light to go for it on fourth down. That's usually where drives stall. And I mean, you just look at his numbers. I mean, he's attempted more field goals in the 40 to 49 yard range than everywhere else combined. You know, 0 to 19, he hasn't attempted any. 20 to 29, he's 4 for 4. 30 to 39, he's 2 for 2. And plus 50 plus, he's 2 for 3. So, I mean, he's only attempted 9 field goals that's not in the 40 to 49 yard range, and he's 16 for 21. I mean, that's just at the end of the day, if you don't make those kicks in the 40 to 49 yard range, you're just not an NFL kicker. And I'm not saying he's not an NFL kicker. I don't want people to take it as that, but if you're not going to make those kicks, you can't be the kicker for an NFL team, especially one that's obviously close, but needs a competent kicker.
Code on X on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. It is now time to talk playoff chances again. Where do the Cardinals stand after falling to 6-5? That's coming up next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Last week on the show, we talked about how the Cardinals seemed to have that number 7 spot with the schedule they had left. It looked like pretty much a lock. We didn't count on them losing to the Patriots, falling to 6-5. But guess what? The Cardinals got some help. They didn't, aside from the Seattle Seahawks pulling off a win, which I'm guessing has finished now.
They just finished.
They were up. They were up. So the Seattle Seahawks, they win. So they now take over the division lead. But the Rams lost, the Buccaneers lost, and the Bears lost. So the teams immediately above them or below them in the wild card race all lost. They did not lose any ground. How confident are you in that spot moving forward?
You know, it's interesting because I think with the way the schedule played out, you felt like you were in a good spot. You felt like the Cardinals were in a spot where they could potentially kind of be that 7 seed, maybe sneak up into that 6th spot. The team that scares me the most right now is simply the San Francisco 49ers. I have no faith or And I mean, this sounds disrespectful, so I don't mean it to come off that way, because I don't think the Cardinals are exactly world beaters by any means. But I don't really have any concern about the Bears. They just seem like they have too many offensive issues. The Vikings, are at 5-6, and maybe they're a team to worry about. They've got too many games left in the NFC North. Their schedule's kind of tough, because they still have – oh, no, they've played the Packers twice. I'm wrong. So they still have the Saints and the Bucks. That's what it was. So they still have the NFC South, and those are both away games. Now, they get Jacksonville and Detroit, but, Detroit this is the same team that just lost to the Dallas Cowboys. So, I'm not terrified of them. It's really the 49ers that worry me the most, because there's still a game at hand with that team. And if you go in tied with them, even though the game's at home, that's a tough thing to do, is sweep the 49ers in a season.
Especially if that's kind of in the sweet spot where Jimmy Garoppolo could be coming back. That defense seems to be playing better. For some reason, they kind of have the Rams number. That's the thing I don't understand this year, is that the 49ers have been a mystery. They keep getting, they got all these energy and injuries. And then, but you've got Nick Mullins, a quarterback who is not playing well. And you worry about, I think, because of the defense and just because of the fact that they do face the Cardinals again, so that you get a chance to in a game itself, make up a game. But at the same time, Cardinals win that game, and it pushes them further back. So, you're right. So there, you can't really trust the Bears. You don't know whether you can trust the Vikings. You've got the 49ers looming, and you've got, let's be honest, the Cardinals have two games with the NFC East still left. So they've got five games. If they're really a playoff team, they better beat the Giants and they better beat the Eagles, because the NFC East is not good. You should definitely beat them beat the Giants with an NFC with no Saquon Barkley. As we saw from the Eagles tonight on Monday night, they can't protect Carson Wentz. Defensively, they can do some things, but they can't protect Carson Wentz at all. So that gets you to eight wins. That means in three NFC West games left, you pick up one, and that's probably going to be enough, right? Nine wins should be enough for that seven seed, don't you think?
Yeah, and we talked about this last week. We felt like going 500 to end the season was probably about where this team was. Between the injuries, they've had other issues outside of injuries. They've now had some bigger COVID losses. I feel like 3-3 was right. Now you're talking about 3-2, because they've lost a game that maybe we didn't expect them to lose, and quite frankly, they shouldn't have lost. But finishing this up at 9-7, when we step back and reassess, we go, oh, that was what we kind of hoped and expected. I think finishing up at 9-7 is disappointing based on where we were
at 5-2, right?
Yeah. At 5-2, and even at 6-3. But, this team has responded both times. This team has responded well after back-to-back losses this season. They came out and put together the best performance of the season against the Jets. you've got to just come out and play in that with that same intensity and hope that you see the same type of fire that you did against the Jets, and maybe this team, you know, puts together another 1-2 game. You know, if you're able to win, go, you know, 2-1 in these next three, I feel like having San Francisco at home and Los Angeles on the road is a good spot to be in. The other thing is, this is the streak where you can probably win three more games in a row, and then you may have a difficult time beating San Francisco even at home, and then an LA team on the road. But you've got, you know, you're coming back home for the first time in what feels like a month. I mean, it's only been 3 weeks, but it feels like a month. And then you've got a game on the road, East Coast, against a bad New York Giants team. Now, we've obviously seen that playing bad teams doesn't necessarily mean much when this team doesn't show up to play. But, you know, that's a winnable game. And then you host Philadelphia, like you said. This three-game streak or stretch is really going to tell you a lot, because if you get back to .500, I think you're in trouble. If you're 6-6, then all of a sudden teams look at you, and you know, if New York wins next week, and I quite frankly don't have any idea who they play. They play at the Seahawks, so they probably won't win that game. But, you know, let's say they somehow pull out a game against the Seahawks, and they're sitting at 5-7, and the Cardinals are 6-6. Then that game's a toss-up, because you're just talking about one game difference. All of a sudden, you don't feel like the Cardinals are the superior team, even if they are. And that's kind of where we're getting to right now, is that they're dropping these games, and it's kind of taking the shine off of the good that they've done this year. I feel like we're disrespecting Bill Belichick a lot in saying that this is a game they should have won, because let's be completely honest. This is what Belichick does, is he puts together defensive schemes that holds great offenses down. And while the Cardinals may have been the number one offense from, you know, the total yardage standpoint in the NFL, they were by no means a great offense yet. And Belichick has made a career out of really kind of putting guys in a position to be successful defensively. And, you know, as much as it sucks at the end of the day, because like we said, from every statistical standpoint, the Cardinals were the superior team. I think there were two spots that they were not as good, and that's coaching and special teams. And when you're talking about, you know, maybe a stalemate defensively, to then, you know, you're going to give the nod in terms of coaching to Bill Belichick, unless he's matching up with who, Andy Reid, maybe. I mean, realistically, he's still the best coach in the NFL.
Clearly. Now, as kind of the tenor of our conversation has gone, would you agree that we've all but conceded this division to the Seahawks at this point, because it looks like they have put things together and we're probably going to run away with this division now, as sad as that sounds with five games left in the year. That's kind of like the feeling that we have right now. The Cardinals are slipping. They are probably going, as long as they don't fall apart, they'll make the playoffs, but the Seahawks are going to run away with the division. Doesn't it feel like that now?
Yeah, and I mean, it was unfortunate, because I think a lot of what happened this season, again, became unrealistic expectations when, you know, the Cardinals won on just what was a bad Seattle decision-making on that Sunday night game, and then they came back and had a Hail Mary, and all of a sudden they're in first place in the division because, for whatever reason, like you talked about, the Seahawks can't figure out how to beat the Rams. And everybody, I mean, when you're talking about a week, was it 9 or 10 matchup? I don't even remember. Week 10, or I guess it was 11, right?
Yeah.
A week 11 Thursday night football game for first place. Like, man, that's just, I mean, that's hard to pallet then conceding that 3 games later you're out of it. But I think the reality was always that they were never truly in it because they were going to have to beat Seattle in Seattle on a short week, which is next to impossible to do. And then they were going to have to come back and find a way to win, you know, games to, you know, probably both games against LA. And so I never felt like I know that they controlled their own destiny, so to speak, in the division. But at the end of the day, too, you've got to be realistic about where they are still as a team. And like I said, they're just not quite there yet. And I mean, I'm not a huge DVOA guy in terms of, you know, Football Outsiders stuff. But, you know, between Justice Mosqueda and his work with the ANYA and then DVOA, the Cardinals are really about where they're supposed to be. They're a team that's right in that, you know, 11 to 15 range in the NFL. And I feel like that's a fair place to put them overall. They're not quite on the same tier as some of these teams that are consistent winners yet, just because they haven't, you know, done it enough. I mean, again, we're talking about year two of what was basically a complete rebuild. And they're, you know, I think, again, you got excited about talking about and being in a Thursday night football game for control of the division, when in reality, it was going to take a lot for this team to be the winner of the NFC West, no matter what.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Pittsburgh Cardinals talk on the web, we hit the final segment of the show where we're going to talk about the Cardinals game this weekend against the LA Rams. Week 13, is it a must win? Let's break this game down. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals play the Rams this week, and first and foremost, is it a must-win? I think it's as close to one as we've got so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think losing to New England made this more of a need-to-win as opposed to a must-win. I mean, a must-win means fighting for your, you know, playoff life. I think they need to win this game if they want to stay kind of in that control seat for the seventh seed and really kind of fast forward the development of this team. You know, I think losing this game, falling to 6-6 after being at 6-3, I don't think it's worrisome in terms of if they're, you know, on the right track. I still think unless they lose out, they're on the right track. But I think that if you want to be considered, you know, the front runner for that seventh seed, then yeah, this team's got to win this week and really continue to be able to say they control their own destiny.
That's absolutely right. The problem is that if we're serious about them being a postseason team, even if they sort of back into it, they can't be in a 3-game skid. They can't lose 4 out of 5. They've lost kind of that mojo that they had, and a win over the Rams, you know, that will totally do is put us back into the positivity side of things, because the Cardinals all year have taken us on a roller coaster. We started the year, you know, 2-0. We're like, can they go 5-0? Then they lose 2. Then they went 3 in a row. We're like, oh, could they be 7-2 when they go in? and then they lose the Dolphins. Then they get the Hail Mary, and then we're like, whoa, they've turned a corner again. They just haven't turned the corner. And so I think we've hit a rough patch. It's time for the Cardinals to build up that goodwill again. And if it's anything how the season has gone, it's going to happen. Now, in terms of prediction, do I want to predict a Cardinals win? It's hard for me to do at this point the way they're playing and how the way they're playing the Rams. Well, the Rams are playing, but here's the thing. It's as close to a must-win as they need because it really puts them in a bad situation. You start worrying about players believing in themselves, believing in what they've got the rest of the season. And at the same time, if we're seeing a young team like this, they kind of need that mojo because when they press, they make mistakes.
Yeah, and I think they're starting to get a little frustrated with the inability to close out games, and that's one of the biggest kind of steps any team has to take in the NFL is learning how to win. And this is, you know, the only way you do that is by losing, and obviously you don't want to lose often, but I mean, you even look at a guy like Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. I mean, Andy Reid's legacy before he finally beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl was that he was a loser. You know, winning one of the more winning coaches in regular season NFL history, but a guy that could not win the big game. And, you know, it took him being fired by the Eagles, you know, signed to Kansas City calling for his head in the Alex Smith years to, you know, getting maybe the best quarterback in the NFL or, you know, quickly becoming one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history before he kind of won. And in the end, he's still only one, and it's been a lot of failure before Andy Reid became, you know, kind of the other great coach in the NFL. Now I'm not going to say Cliff will ever get there because that's an unfair statement, but it's going to take some time. It's going to take some lumps, and it's unfortunately going to take these just utterly frustrating losses to inferior teams, maybe inferior skilled teams is the better way to put it, before you see that turnaround. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think you and I both agree that Cliff is good, has the goods to be the guy, but at the same time, you know, he's got to start stacking these wins when he gets the chance. And it's something that, you know, that's what great coaches do. And he's clearly not quite there yet.
Well, and if we look at this matchup, they really need it. This is a team the Cardinals haven't beat since Sean McVay took over. And not only have the Rams won six in a row, they've beaten the pants off of the Cardinals in every single game except for weeks and their last meeting last year when it was relatively close, but they put up 31 points or more in every single game. But here's the thing, I don't know what to think of the Rams this year because they were surprisingly better than expected to start the year, and then they do some things that you're just like, I don't know if this team is quite there yet. Their offense has been great sometimes, but not like Sean McVay genius great. Their defense has been much better this year. They've lost their left tackle. Jared Goff is not a star. He's capable. But what do you think of this team? Because they look like they were on track to compete, to keep pace with the Seahawks and kind of be the team that to kind of be, you know, the heavyweight fight against the Seahawks this year, you know, matching them punch for punch up until the end of the season. And then they put up the stinker against the 49ers, a game they had no business losing. What can we learn from that loss in the 49ers? How much was fluke and how much is what can really be with the Rams?
Well, I think a lot of it can really be with the Rams. They're, like you said, they're a bit inconsistent offensively. You kind of just look at the gross numbers, 19th in points for just under 24 points a game. Yards, they're sixth. I mean, that's a really big disparity. They throw the ball pretty well. They run the ball pretty well. But they turn the ball over. And then the thing with them is that they tend to go in waves. It's kind of like the Cardinals. They get into these funks. I mean, you look at the games, some of the games they've lost, 35-32 to Buffalo, 28-17 to Miami, 24-16 earlier to San Francisco, and then 23-20 to San Francisco. Those are all, I mean, the Bills obviously have a pretty good offense, but none of those teams, I would say, are great offensively, you know. But then you look at the other things. They hold the Bucs to 24 points on offense. They hold, you know, the then healthy Cowboys to only 17 on offense. And then, you know, when they beat Seattle, they only gave up 16 to Seattle.
So
they're very Jekyll and Hyde. Sorry.
Yeah.
They're very Jekyll and Hyde with who shows up. You know, it does suck that the Cardinals are, of course, catching them coming off of a loss.
So here's some things. We saw against the 49ers that there's a matchup the Cardinals should be able to exploit, and that's Hassan Reddick on Joseph Noteboom. The 49ers had two sacks. They were both by Kerry Hyder. He's not been one to produce a whole lot in his career. And Hassan Reddick, he's got a dry spell right now. So whether it's Hassan or whether it's Marcus Golden, they should be able to get pressure on Goff's blind side. Jared Goff turned the ball over three times on Sunday. He has been the last couple of years more prone to turning the ball over than the previous couple of years. You look at some of the things that San Francisco did offensively. They were able to churn out yards in the running game, and that bodes well for the Cardinals because their running game with the running backs, they can churn out yards. They're kind of consistent at it. If they can get Kyler Murray involved, then that's when that running game becomes dynamic. And Deebo Samuel went off for 11 catches, 133 yards. That means that, hey, there's the possibility of either DeAndre Hopkins or Christian Kirk, one of those two players having a big game. And so you kind of look at that and you're like, okay, there's some elements that you like. Do you think the Cardinals are at the point where they can turn things around against the Rams? We saw a change last year between the first game and the second game. The first game after the bye, they were completely lost. And in that last game, that in week 17, when Kyler was, you know, not 100% with the hamstring, they were right there. They never had control of the game, but they avoided losing control completely. If they weren't in control, but they didn't let it spiral. Do you see the possibility of them taking that next step, putting together a good game plan, and flipping? You know, I've talked about over the last few weeks how they flipped the script. Finally flip the script against the Rams?
Yeah, I really hope so. I'd like to see this team come out and play an aggressive, full game. I mean, you look at this last week, they had their second best defensive performance of the season. Probably second best after the Jets, but they're the Jets, so I guess that doesn't really count. And then you had a great start, you know, kind of that fast start that we've been talking about to the game. And then you just hit that lull again. And it was almost like the game was lost when they were unable to convert that fourth down touchdown right before the half. And the team basically said, this is, you know, we can't do it again. And you know, I'd like to think that this team is more resilient than that, and that we'll see that kind of come to fruition this week, and kind of start playing for the guy that's, I mean, at the end of the day, Cliff's job is to win games. So I don't want it to come off like I'm making excuses for Cliff, but the guy that's kind of fallen on the sword in all of this continues to be Cliff. He continues to take the blame week in and week out for the players and you know, not doing their job. Maybe, you know, there's a pride thing that these guys can rally and kind of and respond to in kind of like, hey, he's defended us. Let's go out and let's defend him and kind of what he said about us. That starts, though, kind of at the top. Are they able to get consistent, you know, use of Kyler and his legs? Are they going to be able to get something out of him in this game? And is he going to be able to take on that onus? If not, then it's on Cliff to figure out how to manufacture yards without having him kind of be the catalyst to it. Because that's the other thing that's we found is if this team can't run the football consistently, they're not going to win a lot of games. And Kyler not being a threat to run has become a huge, huge issue for this team. And so that is, you know, something that we'll have to follow, because if Kyler's not able to run physically, or they just don't want to put the shoulder in any more danger, then Cliff has got to develop a scheme that's going to still allow him to be dynamic, and threaten defenses and keep pressure on defenses, which they haven't done the last 2 weeks.
What matchup for you is the most concerning for the Cardinals? And for me, I'm going to look at one in particular, and that's Cooper Kupp against Byron Murphy when he's inside, and then Drake Kirkpatrick on the outside, because Kupp has, you know, nothing short of fantastic the last couple of years. And I think, you know, Robert Woods can give the Cardinals trouble. I think he's the type of receiver that Patrick will be able to match wits with, at least. But Cooper Kupp is the matchup there for me that's going to be the trouble one, I think.
You know, and I think you kind of nailed it in terms of position, and I just think it's both of them. I don't know if the Cardinals have a consistent enough secondary right now to stop either of them. We haven't seen it, at least, where they're consistently shutting down opposing receivers. If anything, I thought Cam was awful this week, and the Cardinals, you know, made the plays that they needed to make. So, you know, I think that's the big thing is can this team slow down a dynamic duo of Kupp and Woods? If not, you know, it's going to be a long game.
And I think the key for that is how much they can rattle Jared Goff. He's a super talented player, but there's one thing. If he gets young Carson Palmer, if you get his feet moving, if you give him happy feet, he's gonna make mistakes. And the Cardinals haven't been able to, like, they're getting some sacks and they're getting some hits, but as you've noted before, their pressure rate's not super high. So they're among league leaders in hits, they're among league leaders in sacks, but their overall pressure rating is not good. That's just when they get pressure, they're finishing.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is they've got to create, you know, they've got to make him uncomfortable. And I thought they did a decent job of that with Cam Newton. you know, they responded well to an athletic quarterback after they struggled to contain Russell Wilson in the last game. Obviously, Cam's not quite the athlete he was during his MVP run, but he's still, you know, athletic enough. I think at the end of the day, they've got to find a way to get Goff off of his spot. They've got to find a way to make him throw the ball quickly and not allow for Kupp and Woods to kind of get into their routes and run free, which has been an issue for this team this year.
Prediction time. What is your expectation? How do you think the game plays out on Sunday?
Oh, this is a tough one. I thought the Cardinals would have won the last one. I wanted to say that they're going to win this game, but I think it's going to be a close loss. I'll say 27-26 Rams win.
And that's kind of what I had. I think the prediction I made for Sports Weekly, for my Sports Weekly write-up, was 28-27 or 28-26 Rams. It's just at the point, you know, you guys know me. I'm one to look positively. I can't, based on how the Cardinals are playing right now, predict them to come out and win. Do I think they can? Yes, I do. I think they will come out and play better. But ultimately, the trends aren't good. And the Rams are trending, even with the loss, are trending better than the Cardinals. And so instead of predicting a bounce back win, and I'm hoping for one, obviously, I think that unfortunately, this will be the Cardinals going to 6-6 in panics will begin to set in with the fan base, and the Cardinals will lose almost in the same fashion. So 28-27, 28-26, and heaven help us if it's the result of Zane Gonzalez missing a game-winning field goal, because I don't know how much more fans will be able to stand, because as bad as things are, some people already want Cliff Kingsbury fired. Let's stop with that talk right now. He's a coach who talks like he knows he's got job security, and you've got to give him at least this year and maybe even the year after, unless things are disastrous. And we're not a disastrous yet. We're a disappointing. But with that said, we both pick a Cardinals loss. Maybe that's what we need to turn the tides for the Cardinals as we wrap up this episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk of the web. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is episode 289. We will be back again next week, hopefully talking about a 7-5 Cardinals team instead of a 6-6 team. We'll be back again next week, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.